Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. From humble beginnings in Guadalajara, Mexico, to the new executive director for Horizons of Friendship in Coburg, Rodrigo Koenigs is very excited to be leading this non-government organization based in Northumberland County. In this interview, he will share his life story and his passion for helping others. Plus, he will give an insight into what he thinks is in store for the future. I'm so pleased to have with me today Rodrigo Koenigs, the new executive director of Horizons of Friendship. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
I think a good place to start is to have you tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, sure. I'm from Mexico. That's where I grew up, from a city called Guadalajara. It's kind of like in the middle west part of the country. I have a bachelor's degree in international development, in international relations, from the ITESO University in Guadalajara. And just like a lot of people, I moved to this country trying to look for a better future, and that was like 20 years ago. In August, it's gonna be 20 years. I did a little of everything, just like a lot of immigrants, and I eventually learned enough English and saved them enough money to do my master's degree in international development with the University of Ottawa. Ever since then, I have worked with a lot of nonprofit organizations in different capacities. But a common trend has been that I have worked with marginalized communities, people affected by mental health problems, addictions, homelessness, people with chronic illnesses, people with previous interactions with the justice system. So I have more than, I think around 15 years of experience working in the nonprofit sector in Canada, always there in the nonprofit, supporting organizations. And I started at Horizons just like a month ago. So I'm still learning the ropes here, but I'm very excited.
Tell us a bit about your early life. What was it like growing up in Guadalajara?
Growing up in Guadalajara, it was fun. I spent a lot of time hanging out with my friends on the streets playing football or soccer, how we call it here in Canada. They truly became part of my family, my neighborhood friends. I'm still in touch with them. Daniel and Chuy, if you ever watch this podcast or listen to this podcast, I shout out to you guys. And it was good. But also, I became aware really quickly about injustices. There's a lot of, I think there are two angles in terms of injustices that are like very structural. One is race-based. You know, people are still judged by the color of their skin, for example. And it was in my teenage years when I started like dating girls, I realized that, you know, like some of my friends that had darker skin weren't as welcome as I was, for example. You know, like this is prejudice still. And the other big one is poverty. If you are poor, you sometimes, you know, get judged in a very harsh way. Social classes is still something very prevalent. I think we inherited that from the colonial times, perhaps. So there's this, like, you know, race and education kind of like conjunction that, you know, makes marginalization a big problem in where I'm from. So growing up, I quickly became aware of that, and you know, like, I remember being very vocal about what I considered to be unfair. So this is something that I have always, like, been present in my life. Something that changed me quite a bit was when I was, I think, 15 years old, when the Zapatista uprising started in the south part of Mexico, in Chiapas. That was an eye-opener for me. I was a big city, middle-class kid, you know, and all this. So then I became aware of the existence of the native communities down in the south, for example, and the injustice that they were facing, and how trapped they were in terms of poverty and marginalization. So that a few years later, when I was 17, I had a chance to volunteer and go down there as a human rights observer. That's how much impact that event had on me.
That trip you took as an observer in the Zapatista uprising, what did you see, and how did it influence you?
Well, I saw a couple of things. The first thing that struck me the most, again, as a city boy from a middle class family, was the isolation. I remember I landed in the Tuxtla Gutierrez Airport in Chiapas, and I had to, like, take a bus to San Cristobal, and then I had to, like, take another small van to another town called Ocosingo, and then another one that dropped me off pretty much in a dirt road, and I waited for a truck to pass by and pick me up out of their goodwill and drop me off in, you know, after a few hours in a village. It was literally in the middle of nowhere in the jungle, and so that was the first one, you know, like the lack of infrastructure, for sure. And it's very marked in Mexico. The north, generally speaking, the north part of Mexico tends to be more developed. The middle part is also fairly developed, and normally government institutions are there. And then the south is way less developed and has a very, very high poverty rate. So isolation comes with that, right? Like, you know, access to public services and things like that. So that's the first thing. The second one was the strong military presence. I saw, like, soldiers everywhere with their machine guns and their, you know, like, armor cars and everything. And it was really shocking for me, because in big cities, normally you don't see that. And the last thing that struck me that perhaps the most was that for the first time in my life, I ran into someone from Mexico that didn't speak Spanish. I ran into a person that was a member of an indigenous community that didn't speak Spanish. And that was very shocking. You know, like, it helped me to have a bigger sense of awareness about, like, how diverse my country is in terms of cultures, in terms of access to services, in terms of socioeconomic status.
How did you first learn about Horizons of Friendship?
How did I become aware of Horizons? In all fairness, I learned about it when I was thinking about transitioning to a new job. And I feel like it was almost like a match made in heaven. For instance, one of our partners in Central America, our partner in Chiapas in Mexico, happened to be a sister organization of the place where I volunteered when I was in high school. And it's called DESME. And DESME is part of Fray Bartolomé de las Casas Center. And I volunteered with Fray Bartolomé de las Casas. And so when I had my first phone call with them, I was like, wow, Like, what a coincidence. It's almost like a match made in heaven. But yeah, I became aware of Horizons when I started, like, trying to like move to another job and keep growing professionally. And yeah, and as I mentioned before, it was almost like a match made in heaven for me.
So you've mentioned a bit about the work that was being done and the association with your past, but what else was the attraction to draw you in to make you want to become the executive director?
I many things. First of all, the mandate, fighting poverty is very, very important for me. There's something that a term that we use, or I use at least. I pick it up from a book or so, some other expert in international development, but I call it the poverty trap. So the fact that and when I talk about the poverty trap, I feel I'm talking about those situations where you are in a place in a community where you're born poor, and that it's the main factor that is gonna decide your future. You are trapped. There's no way to move up. If you are in poor in an isolated community, experiencing bad nutrition, with no proper education, it's very, very, very hard for you to move on and have a and reach get closer to reach your full potential. So when I read about Horizons and their mandate to deal with that and try to break that poverty trap in Central America and in Mexico, I was very excited about it. The other one is that I always I went to school for international development. That's my master's degree, and I felt like this was a really good opportunity to start moving in that direction. Most of my experience in the past has been focusing a lot in nonprofit organizations whose mandate is in Canada. So this was a good opportunity for me to kind of like move to an international kind of like level. The other one is that it's an organization that is going through a big transition. As you mentioned it before, we had the same executive director for many, many years, Patricia, who did a wonderful job for Horizons. But Patricia is retiring. So are other key staff members. So this is a good opportunity for me kind of to like reinvent Horizons a little bit, like shape it in a different way, in a way that is sustainable and continues doing its mandate.
What do you see as the successes of Horizons?
Well, the main one is the impact that it's having in the local communities in Mesoamerica, which is Central America and the south part of Mexico. We just finished a huge project in Guatemala, related to healthcare for moms and infants, and it was very, very successful. I was told that we managed to actually reduce the mortality rate in those communities that we were operating. So that to me, that's one of the biggest successes. That's prolonging lives. That's allowing people to, get closer to reach their potential. Another one has been to like to thrive. When I read about Horizons, I was amazed that this small community of 19,000, is the home of an international development agency, right? That's a very special thing. And now that I live in Oshawa, but I've been going every day pretty much to Coburg this month. Every time I talk to people, they tell me how important is Horizons for them and how much they remember, the building, remember going to the thrift store as kids, remember volunteering, donating. It's part of the community. So that's, to me, that's another success because we are not a large, complex organization with 3,000 staff or 300 staff, right? Like we're a small team that is following a mandate of fighting poverty and breaking the poverty trap in Mesoamerica.
Finances are always a focal point for any nonprofit. How would you describe the organization's finances, and what are your plans for fundraising?
So our finances are stable. We are very, very lucky that Patricia and Rick and the ones that were before, they had a really good vision in terms of stability for the organization. So we're very stable. The challenge that we have is to, there are two things. One, to grow, to see how we can engage a larger pool of donors and supporters, because that will allow us to have a bigger impact in Mesoamerica. And the second one is that a lot of our donors are aging donors. So we need to find a way to like make sure that we work for the future as well. We have wonderful, wonderful donors that have been supporting us for, you know, like 40, 30, 50 years. But the reality is that, you know, sadly, some of them, you know, they are not in the possibility of donating anymore. Some of them passed away. So we need to make sure that we re-energize our organization, and we start engaging a wider pool of donors and supporters.
What do you do when you're not working hard at Horizons? So what do you do to relax and have fun?
That's a good question. I normally come back home and I spend time with my kids and my wife. I have two kids, Lucy, who's 2 years old, and Ellis, who's five. They normally go to bed around 7:38 p.m. Then I do my chores here. And normally the person in charge of doing the washing the dishes and cleaning the kitchen, once that's done, I try to talk to Rebecca a little bit, my wife, and watch TV for the most of it. Something that I try to do, though, that is important for me as well, is I try to like sit down and have a good conversation with a friend once a week. That's what I do. That's what helps me a lot to relax. A nice, meaningful, honest conversation where you can be vulnerable and talk about your worries and your pains and what's making you happy, and that's what relaxes me. And I'm very lucky and very blessed to have a good roster of friends that are willing to take on that challenge and sit down with me and have those conversations.
So what's next for you and Horizons?
What's next for me? You're asking me really good questions and really big questions. What's next for me? Well, right now, we're in the process of hiring new staff. The person in charge of our fund development, or the person in charge of managing the relationships with our donors, is retiring. So we are in the process of hiring somebody new for that position. I'm trying my best to make sure that this person has opportunity to overlap with the person that is retiring, so they can transfer their knowledge. Because, you know, organizing fundraising events, writing grants, it's a skill that you can learn, but the understanding the relationships with your donors is something that you acquire, right? So if you had a chance to learn from the person that is owning those relationships, that's going to help to smooth the transition. That's one. The other one is, I think we have to like transition or horizons a little bit to the reality of nonprofit organizations, you know, like being more flexible, allowing people to work from home. That will help us to like, you know, reach out a larger pool of talent in order to like, and people interested in working with us, finding meaningful ways to engage our stakeholders, like our donors and our volunteers. That's another one. But I think putting that aside, we need to do a little bit of soul searching in terms of how we want to see the future look like for our horizons. You know, like things have changed. So in terms like financially, you know, like we have this large project that's over. Hopefully we can get another one in the future, but in the meanwhile, we need to make sure that we continue with our mission and continue supporting our partners, and we continue to do our best to get people in Mesoamerica to reach their potential.
Rodrigo Koenigs, thank you so much for talking to me today.
No, my pleasure.
That was Rodrigo Koenigs, the new executive director for Horizons of Friendship. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.